Good evening and welcome to Family Matters. I'm Jill Ajeezy. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. Of course, I'm here with my lovely co-host, Judge Michelle Laurence. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us tonight.
What's going on in Cook County Courts in Chicago this week? Anything exciting we need
to know
about?
Well, we got a new chief judge, so that's kind of a big deal for us, Judge Grace Dickler, and everybody's very happy with her.
Well, that's wonderful.
She's insightful. She's got wisdom. She's progressive, so we've got that.
So important. What, Michelle, why is that important for a judge to be thoughtful and progressive?
Well, that's what I think is important. Because we have to continue to evolve with the realities of what's going on. And most of our divorce system is frozen in time from 40 years ago. We try and be progressive. I don't think we're progressive enough. So that's why I think it's important because, you know, families are falling apart now more than ever. The divorce system is hurting people, as well-intended as it might be, and things need to really be updated.
And
one other thing, Jill, with all the new studies on parenting and shared parenting and damage to children, we have more studies than we had 40 years ago, 20 years ago, 5 years ago. We need to incorporate that in how the system works.
And I think it's so important that we have a really progressive thinking leader in Illinois and our Speaker of the Illinois House, Mike Madigan, who was forward thinking enough 4 years ago to form the Illinois Family Law Study Committee to look at the Illinois Marriage and Dissolution Act because it hadn't been revamped in 40 years. And as you say, that's very antiquated law. So we had, and I serve on that committee, we had to look at that law, at those statutes and say, look, the nuclear family isn't what it was 4 years ago. It could be very different. It's not your parents' family. And so we looked at it in that way, and hopefully those statutes will come out of the legislature in the spring session unscathed the way we sent them in. I don't know how it's going to end up, but we're hopeful that those recommendations will be passed. So we're moving along slowly but surely in a path to divorce culture change in America. And I want to point out that I received a, and I know you know about this, and I'm a member of the Association of Family and Conciliation Courts, and they are having their regional training conference in Indianapolis. So the Midwest is getting some good things. October 27th through the 29th, working with high conflict and violent families, a race with no winners. And so many people don't understand that many parental alienation cases end in horrible domestic violence issues, much like I did at my television show, Family Matters, with a woman named Penny Watkins, who's a grandmother from Central Illinois, whose son, Stephen, was shot in the back of the head when going to pick up his little girl for visitation. She now is a strong advocate and sponsoring a bill in the Illinois legislature, but many times these children end up in a very, very bad way. So that's something we need to be very aware of. The domestic violence plays a strong part in some of the parental alienation cases that exist. So I want to move on because we have somebody on our show tonight that is so very exciting to me and a new friend to me, and I'm so glad that she's taking time tonight to be with us. Christy Swanson, welcome.
Thank you very much, Joe.
We are so excited that you're here, and I want to, you know, to say how we kind of came together. Your agent called me and said you wanted to talk to me, and you gave me a call, and we've been talking ever since about your passion, which is creating awareness and educating people, which is what I like to do for parental alienation awareness. And you have a reason for that, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But I want you to tell our listening audience what you've been up to. Now, a lot of people know you. I mean, you are just so popular on Facebook, and your movies are wonderful. But let's talk about, you were a child star. Let's take it from there and tell us how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, I started out in show business at the age of 9, and I come from Orange County, California. My parents are school teachers, and, you know, I started acting at the age of 9, and, you know, it's 32 years later, and, you know, I'm still doing it. And so, you know, I grew up in a business that, you know, was highly competitive and very adult and, you know, for a young child, kind of grew up very quickly and was homeschooled from 7th grade through 12th grade by my parents. And, you know, I saw a lot as a child. I saw a lot of, you know, I saw quite a bit of abuse, actually, you know, just within the, you know, like, just kids acting that didn't want to act, you know, stage moms, that kind of stuff. I was just sort of very sensitive to those kinds of issues that were going on around me, and I always appreciated the fact that I came from a really good, strong family. My parents were raising me very well, and I had a strong home, and that's what really helped me sort of survive all these years in show business. You know, it's not an easy form to be in, and it's something that I really pride my parents on taking good care of me that way.
Well, you certainly hear all the time about child stars that go the way of alcohol abuse or drug abuse and can't make that leap from child star into being in the mainstream adult film industry, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean a grown-up as an adult in the film industry, and you certainly have done that quite successfully. Your family played a strong part in that. Now, are your parents still married now?
My parents were married for 45 years. It's been about 10 years now since they split up. And, you know, it was tough, you know, as an adult at the age of 30, you know, losing that rock, that bond, that everything that meant everything to me. And I always looked up to my parents' marriage and thought that they were the be-all, end-all and admired them. And they were my anchor as far as what I wanted for my future and being married and having a family. So it was tough when they broke up, not by my mom's choice or anything. It was my father's, and he remarried. And ever since then, I've been an adult victim of alienation with my father, where his new wife...
Can I stop you for 1 second, Christy? Because you said something that I really want to focus on a little bit, something that nobody really talks about. And a lot of people have mentioned it to me and come to me with it. Adult children of divorce have a really hard time, but nobody thinks they're supposed to. So there's not a lot of resources for them. There's not a lot of help. And most of all, there's not a lot of sympathy. Can you talk a little bit about what that experience is like and what parents should know who think, okay, my kid's grown up. What should they be doing differently? What do they need to know?
Well, what they should be doing differently is, and this is the perfect case, my father. I think that parents who divorce that have adult children should treat it just like they have small children. It's a big disruption to your life. My world got torn apart right before my eyes. I couldn't believe it. It was shocking. It was so hurtful and so confusing and had so many emotions going on. The one thing that I wish my father had done was take a minute, let the dust settle, nurture my relationship with him, treat me with kid gloves, I guess you would say.
Sure.
Be sensitive. For him, it was like, it's like he snapped or something, you know. It's like, boom, I'm changing my life. It's different now. I'm leaving, and this is my new life, and you have to accept it, and you have to be a part of it, and this is the way it is. And it was just this wham, bam, now you have a new family and a new situation, and you're supposed to like it. And there was no, wait a second, you know, my house just blew down. My foundation just broke, and now you're asking to build a new home here and a new relationship with no foundation. I need that foundation. And in order for, you know, like, he and I needed to heal. You know, he's so hell-bent on me being, you know, so, you know, accepting of his new wife and his new life and all this stuff. But we need to work on our pain, our hurt, our, you know, or my emotions of this experience in order for me to get to the point where I can, you know, accept his new life or be a part of it. It's called baby steps. And, it, you know, even though I'm an adult, I still, you know, it's hard because he's my best friend forever. I mean, we were always so very, very close. And now I don't even know him. I don't have a, I can't even talk on the phone with him without interference, you know?
Interference with his new, by his new wife.
Yes.
Is she competitive with you? Because that's so, that happens so often.
I'm not going to say that she is, but everybody else does.
Yeah,
I
see.
You know, everybody else can see it. I guess I don't really totally see it because, I mean, I just have always been focused on wanting to have, you know, closeness with him and sort of rebuild our relationship and, you know, whoever he is right now. You know, it's hard to, he doesn't even sound the same. He doesn't look the same. You know what I mean? Everything about him is so different from what I knew with my mom. You know, 45 years of marriage is a really long time. He was in my life for 30 years. And, you know, it's tough, man. It's really
yeah, it's
tough.
Really hard to expand around that. And,
Crystal,
but
how
he
does
must
your
be
mom...
in a loyalty bind, too. I mean,
Pardon?
He must be in a difficult spot, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I have no clue what's going on there. I don't
yeah.
understand it, you know. You know, I mean, a perfect example just recently, you know, I didn't speak to him for about a year and a half. Because, you know, just spending time with him, like having lunch with him, you know, I just want to see him, you know, without her. Just he and I just have lunch, and that is like pulling teeth. And I don't understand that because he's my dad, and he should want to spend time with me and my son, you know, his grandson. And, you know, when there's family events or whatever, then we can incorporate his new life and his new wife. That's fine. I have no problem with that. I can be cordial and start to get used to it. But I need to build that broken bond and heal first.
And,
right.
And Christy, how is your mom responding to all of this with you? Is she being very supportive of you in
mm-hmm.
the way that you're feeling?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my mom is just one of the strongest people that I've ever known. And, I mean, she's just an incredible woman, so loving, so nurturing, so comforting. It's broken her heart to see this happen. It's not what she wanted for me at all. She wants me to have a relationship with my dad. She wants me to be close with him. Even though they're apart, it's not about them. She knows she can decompartmentalize, you know, that it's about me and him, and she wants that for me. And she's been incredibly supportive and loving and nurturing and, you know, trying to help every way she can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a funny thing. When I was doing the book tour, most of the producers, and you probably know this, I know Jill knows this, are like in their 20s, the producers of TV and radio. And
mm-hmm.
every one of them would open up to me in their 20s, early 30s. They would open up about how they were ravaged by their divorce. And some of them were full-grown adults when it happened. And I remember
mm-hmm.
this one woman, and she said to me, well, my parents kind of had an amicable divorce, and I'm consumed by it. I said, really? How old were they? She says, well, I was already 20 when they got divorced. And I said, and you consumed... You know why? It's just what you said, Christy. They thought she was like done and grown up. They didn't pay
mm-hmm.
it. They didn't explain it to her. They didn't sit her down. They didn't do it. And I'm not faulting the parents. I don't think they realize how much suffering the adult children undergo. And I'm
well,
so glad you're bringing this up.
I think it's
sort of a pet subject
for
me.
So many,
mm-hmm. yeah.
so many people will say, I'm going to stay married until the kids get out of high school, and then I'm going
right.
to go. Thinking that
yeah.
high school is the breaking point for children. They've become adults now, and then it'll be okay for them. And I think what you're saying is incredibly important. But, Christy, I want to know, you said your parents, for the length of their marriage, were the rock, and you looked at your future life and your marriage as you know, based on what you gleaned from their marriage. Now,
mm-hmm.
did that disillusion you when you married Lloyd? Were you disillusioned, or could you somehow get your head around, I'm going to make this work despite what's happened there?
Yeah, I was able to separate that. You know, I realized, you know, I didn't marry Lloyd until 2009. So, you know, it had been, six or seven years since my parents split up. So I was, or more. I don't know. I'd have to look at the dates. But what I'm saying is that I was able to realize that my parents' breakup, you know, I did have some healing time over the fact that they broke up. I knew that it wasn't about me. I knew it wasn't my fault.
Right.
I knew that it, you know, I wasn't going to, you know, follow in their footsteps or any of that stuff. It's my life. It's my choice. I'm going to do.
But I guess what I'm saying is you had this vision of what it was supposed to be, and that was destroyed for you. And so when you look at the perfect world and you know, I want to have the princess wedding and I want to do this and I want to do that the way that my parents did. I guess what I'm saying is, did you look at marriage differently then?
I think I still took from the fact that even though my parents split up, I could still look back on their relationship and what I learned from their relationship and how communicative they were, how close they were, how loving they were towards each other, how all the values that they taught my brother and I. I mean, I still, that was all instilled in me all my life. So that never went away. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But conceptually, and this isn't even a personal question, if all of that is true, one of the things that I have seen is that the children that haven't seen the stress, or the adult children who say their parents were fairly happy, and then when that blows up, it's like, how does a tsunami happen in quiet, calm waters? So what happens to some of the people that I've talked to is they don't even trust the calm anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
how do you reconcile the disparity of great marriage, and then what does it tell us about marriage if even that isn't enough?
I think you just don't ever give up. If there's anything I learned from my father and the mistake that he made, he gave up. You know, it's so easy. Marriage is tough. You have to nurture it every single day. You have to
check in,
and you got to take care of each other. And there's good times and there's bad times and all that stuff. And you can't give up. You just don't ever give up on each other.
I'm gonna step in for a second, and we have a caller, so I'm gonna take a call and see what this question is. Welcome, area code 913. Hi, do you have a question for Christy?
I do, Christy. This is Ryan, your number one Twitter fan. I was excited to listen to you tonight, so I thought I'd give a buzz.
Thank you, Ryan.
You're welcome. Hey, I commend you for what you're doing. I think it's important, obviously, when somebody has a following and can use, you know, their star power for good and to express things that really matter and give people something to follow. And the other thing is I have two little girls who are 6 and 5, and, you know, I've taken the advice that you had and just wanted to let you know that, you know, my priority for them is so they can utilize, you know, the most thing, because we'll be out at the store and then, you know, we'll turn on, you know, a radio at Target or something, and then I'll start dancing and, you know, just kind of messing around. And I just try to convey to the fact that it's okay to have fun, and it's not, you know, you don't always have to worry about everybody else, and trying to, you know, kind of form that bond with them to where, you know, they can use that and have it as a support and, you know, with their confidence and everything too. So.
Mhm. Well, thank you for calling in and sharing.
I'm not sure exactly which part of what Christy's doing you're referring to. I mean, I know you know, and I know Christy knows, but I don't think our listeners know. So which part of it, Ryan, is it that helps you so much so that we can pass it on?
Well, I think it's just focusing on my girls and knowing that regardless of what happens in the day-to-day stuff with my wife, if there's arguments or issues, it's never the time to, you know, we always make sure that our kids know that mom and dad have problems and we talk sometimes, but I always just stress that there's always got to be, you know, they've always got to know and always be aware, never have a question, that they're always loved no matter what.
All right, of course.
Great, Ryan. Thank you for calling. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you, Ryan.
Well, let's go back to what we were talking about just a second ago. And Christy, I'd like you to address Now you have a whole nother layer added to the issues that you have with this, and that's being a celebrity. How do you deal with the glitz and glamour is lovely, you know, out there in Hollywood, you're doing the makeup artist and the hair and the red carpet and all of these great things, but in the back of your mind sometimes, this is there. And, you know, people would say to you, it's sort of the same thing they said to me and why my book is called The Look of Love. You're living the way people think you should live, and it's this great, beautiful world. But there's still issues because everybody has an issue. We found that out working through this, Michelle and I. And so how do you reconcile this issue with the other part? How do celebrities deal with this high-profile life and then being a parent and trying to live a normal life?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think I live a pretty simple and normal life. You know, the glamour of my business is and the mystery of showbiz and making movies and all that. It, you know, is a small portion of my life. It's not an everyday occurrence. Even when I'm making a film, it's gritty and it's dirty and it's long hours and it's tiring. You know, there's nothing glamorous about making a movie. It's really just when the movie is released that it's kind of glamorous, you know. I think that, you know, I live a very sort of humble, normal life. And, you know, fortunately, because of what I do for a living that is extraordinary, that I'm able to be in the public eye, I'm able to, you know, bring awareness to certain causes and things that are going on in the world that I can, you know, put my foot in and help and do what I can to help others, you know. And this particular issue actually hits really close to home for me, you know. So my passion is even greater, and I want to do everything that I can for children out there and adult children out there to educate them and you know, find help for them and, you know, a solution. And I'm you know, hoping that you two will be able to, you know, get in there politically and make some big changes for the kids of our future.
Well, and you're so right, because it is our future that we're looking at. If we have an entire nation full of kids who are having issues from divorce and parental alienation and visitation interference, what are we looking towards? You know, you and I and Michelle are all going to be in a nursing home with a bunch of kids who can't make decisions, who have self-esteem issues and trust issues.
Yep.
Running our country. And that's a very, very sad thing, and I think that's what parents need to realize, is that they're sending an entire generation, sometimes it'll be two generations probably of kids that are just having all kinds of problems. And so we need to get a handle on this divorce culture change and get people to understand that they can't use their children as a battleground and a weapon in divorce, that you've got to keep it a two-person conflict, not a three-person conflict, and that this is something. It doesn't even have to be a conflict. I hate even using that word. It's got
right.
to be something that is a very even-keeled, non-emotional issue to get it out of the way. And I know that is so difficult, isn't it, Michelle, to be non-emotional in divorce?
Well, the future thing is the perplexing thing, and I think we can change it. But and I know that Christy knows that two-thirds of the children of divorce never want to have children. So that really, you talk about the future, we're talking about perpetuation of the species.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's really problematic. And that's because of what they view, many, many things. But one of the main factors is the combative system. And they get terrified of conflict. And you can't be in a relationship without conflict. So just back to Christy, the issues that, if you had to list the issues that are of your heart these days, what would they be? So that everybody listening is very clear.
The issues of my heart?
The ones that have to do with the children and the divorce system and the parental alienation, that kind
okay.
of stuff.
Well, you know, Jill told a story earlier on, you know, when we first got on about this father, you know, being shot. And, you know, that's something that, you know, I started crying when I heard that story. Seeing children, you know, getting in the middle of, you know, fights or having to go through trial, you know, over custody issues. You know, I think the problem, the reason why, you know, there's so much conflict with the adults, with the actual parents, is because with the parents that are getting the divorce or have gotten the divorce, is that they're not taking responsibility for their marriage. They need to take responsibility for themselves in the marriage and what, and that, you know, it didn't work for, you know, whatever the reason may be, but take responsibility for your part in that marriage. If you can do that and accept that about yourself, it's going to be a lot easier for you to step up to the plate and take care of your kids properly and not involve them in this mess.
You know,
and Michelle,
I see
that's
in my
a
courtroom.
Whole chapter, really a whole chapter in your book, Michelle, is about taking responsibility, taking blame for your part in what happened in your conflict, in your divorce. And I think that was so important when you said that to me. You know, make that call. Talk to him and say, I take responsibility for any pain that I've caused you or for anything that happened within our marriage. And when you do that, it's so... freeing to you as an individual, and whether that person accepts that apology or not is their issue, I suppose. I you know, psychologically, I don't know how that works, but I think for me, it was extremely freeing to make that call.
Well, it's, you know, even if it's just a millimeter, I know that in my divorce, when I took responsibility for my part, however small it was.
Mm-hmm.
Just kidding. It's all equal. I was.
Were you? Because
it was
snickering under my breath.
But it put my healing on such a fast track.
Yeah.
So people think that taking responsibility is going to change their whole story, that it's going to be a crack in the wall that they have built, and that everything will go falling down. And it will, if they take responsibility for 1% out of 100, that means that they're vulnerable to be accused of the rest of the 99. So people don't do it because they're afraid it's going to they have to redo their story about what happened. People don't want to redo their story. They want to hang on to their story as if there's some power in it. But it's very disempowering because it never can be all the truth that the other person is 100% to blame. Just doesn't work that way. So, you know, I see in my courtroom, and I'm so excited to be able to ask Christy this, a radiated effect from TV on the society of this loving to be a spectacle, about people being affected by court TV, people being affected by reality shows. And I always wonder to myself, when celebrities, are they forced to fight out the who did what to whom in the media? Is it all crap? Is it all not true? What's really going on there? Because I have people in my courtrooms replicating that behavior.
Ask that question.
Well, the question is...
The phone cut out, sorry.
Oh, okay. I see it in my courtroom all the time, people replicating the behavior of celebrities when they are accusing each other of different things in the media. Tell us about what goes on behind the scenes. What really happens to celebrities? Are they sort of forced to defend themselves in the media? That's my first question.
You know, I think everybody's situation and story is totally different. It's hard for me to answer that for a whole bunch of other celebrities. You know, some get vocal about it, some don't. Some want to remain, you know, private about their situation. You know, others, you know, get sideswiped with a bunch of bad media or a bunch of bad press, and so they feel they need to get out there and do some damage control, you know, to sort of save face that they are a good parent and they are working hard and they are doing everything that they can do. You know, you don't want your that's your livelihood, you know, being in the public eye, working in TV and films, and you don't want, you know, a bad divorce or custody case to get in the way of what you do for a living, you know, media-wise. So some do get out there and do damage control. I don't really know how to totally answer that completely. I hope I answered it properly.
Well, you did, because I know publicists can help with damage control. And it, unfortunately, regular people don't have publicists, and they could use them, because they would be able, they would be cautioned to not speak about their case where their children could hear about it.
Correct.
But I guess the part B of my question is, what is the experience of children of divorce for celebrities? How would you say that's different than what average people have to undergo?
Well, you know, kids who have parents that are famous, you know, it's out there in the media. You know, people talk about it, and they all form their own opinions. But most of those kids who have grown up with their parents being celebrities are pretty accustomed to being in the media anyway, you know, and they sort of know how to deal with it. I'm not saying that it doesn't affect their life greatly or non-greatly. I'm sure that it does. You know, it's really no different than if you're living in a small town and that sort of situation happens and everyone in town is talking about it, you know. I don't really know, you know, I mean, I have friends that have gone through divorce that have, you know, stayed out of the media completely. You know, family members that have, you know, remained completely silent and not gone out there and discussed or aired their dirty laundry.
Which is really, really a feat in itself to try to keep a celebrity divorce quiet. I mean, if you look at somebody like the Mel Gibson divorce or even now the J-Lo divorce that's happening, Jennifer Lopez is very, very vocal right now. And so to keep that quiet is really, really a great trick. And I think there are a lot of celebrities that can manage to do that and keep their children out of the media. And I think that really is, I mean, for me, the way to go. I would think that would be the best thing for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a firm believer that your children, you know, if you come from an entertainment home, a celebrity home, having your children in the media in a positive light is perfectly acceptable, and there's nothing wrong with it. You know, it's good for the kids. They can have fun. There's, you know, lots of great experiences that they can have in that way. But if you drag them into negative media, then I think that is not acceptable.
I have a question for you from the chat room. I wanted to, this is from Mick, and he's asking, how accepting is Hollywood of the type of activism that you're engaging in now? He says, you're basically showing that there is a good parent and a bad parent. It opens you up to attack. So how do you deal with that, and how accepting have your friends in the entertainment business been of your activism?
Can you shorten that question for me, Jill?
Sure. Basically, he's asking, are your friends being accepting of what you're doing, being an activist in the parental alienation arena? And when you're saying, you know, basically that you're an adult who's experiencing alienation, you're saying that there's one good parent and one bad parent. How do your friends accept that? So it's really two questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, my friends accept it. You know, my friends have lived through it with me.
Mm-hmm.
As far as my situation is concerned with my mom and dad, you know, I'm not sitting here saying that, you know, my mom's the good parent and my dad's the bad parent. I'm just saying that somewhere along the line about 10 years ago, we lost him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's a victim of his own circumstance, whatever circumstance that is. I'm just unable to have a normal, healthy, positive relationship with him where there's no interference from the other side. I'm just trying to build what we used to have, and I'm getting nothing but, you know, friction. I'm an adult now, you know, I'm 41 years old, and I can talk about it, and I'm happy to talk about it. It's healing for me. It's helpful for me. You know, it's helpful in healing for my family. And, you know, I know how it feels to be alienated from your own parent. It's horrible. And, you know, it's devastating. It feels like a death. And, you know, as an adult now, I'm able to, in my celebrity, try to bring awareness for the younger kids who are going through it, who don't get to see their mom or don't get to see their dad because one parent is alienating them from the other. And, you know, it's so wrong, I just want to scream.
Well, I agree with you, Christy. I mean, it is a horrible thing. And you also, and I want to just touch on this really briefly, you had experience in a court in another country. Do you feel, with this issue, do you feel that the court system in other countries, specifically the country that we're talking about, is as off as it is in the United States when dealing with divorce and parental alienation?
Absolutely. I believe that, you know, I mean, I'm seeing it, you know, just on my Twitter page. I'm talking to people in Australia, England, you know, all different countries. It's everywhere. You know, the courts are not recognizing it. They're not taking care of the issue. They're not doing, you know, proper evaluations of, you know, the family unit and how, you know, things are, you know, bouncing back and forth between not doing proper investigations, and kids are suffering for it. And so, you know, my experience, you know, I've got a buddy of mine that just last year, he hasn't seen his kids since last November, and it's heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. And the reason why he hasn't is because this is a good dad who, you know, pays his child support, who's working hard, he wants to be in his children's life, but the court has made it in such a way that there's so much money going towards the kids that now he can't afford to see the kids, you know what
and
I mean?
And I'm fairly confident, I'm pretty sure I know who you're talking about, we won't mention a name, but people would be surprised at the people in the celebrity world in California and all over that are alienated from their children or don't see their children, and they are paying their child support, and there's nothing wrong with them as a parent, but they're just not seeing their children.
Absolutely. And then there's judges making, calling, you know, they're making decisions on financial stuff. You know, they're basically shutting a dad out or a mom out because they made, you know, they were on a TV series and they were making a certain amount of money, you know, per year or per episode for a certain amount of time. But that doesn't mean that lasts for, you know, 20, 30 years. And so they're then stuck having to pay this exorbitant amount of child support on money that they're just actually not making anymore. And it's almost like the court system doesn't understand the entertainment business, you know, and it's the same with sports too. You know, you have a short career. You don't make that money forever. You make it for a certain amount of time.
Michelle, you want to comment on that?
Michelle? Did we lose Michelle?
I think we might have. Hang on. I lost her for a second. There she is.
No, I'm right here. For every profession.
Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
For It ought to be, and I can't speak to the different things, but it ought to be that anybody could get a modification if their income goes down across the board, across the world. It ought to be, the law's written that way. Now, that's number one. Number two, sometimes judges don't believe that the income's gone down. Number three,
right.
It is esoteric, the entertainment business, the sports industry. It's up to the judge to completely educate, it's up to the lawyer to completely educate the judge on the nuances of the profession and not to assume that they understand anything. Because every new profession, every time there's a new profession, I got to learn about it. Now, it's not a given. We don't take class in that. So there can be a lot of mistakes. I'm not saying there isn't.
Right.
Well, I'm just saying how the law is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's the same thing with people who lost everything in the crash that happened in 08, you know, that just happened in 08. the Wall Street people were going to court for modifications and they weren't getting it. The judges didn't believe that the money wasn't somewhere. They were tainted.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? They were tainted, and the coloration was that they weren't being honest because they had become the villains of Wall Street. So very well could be that in the entertainment industry, the judges have this idea that they're celebrities and they could always get their hands on some money. Who knows? I don't know what people are thinking.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what's happening. Yeah,
they have a preconceived notion about what a celebrity is and where, you know, that everyone's rich and everybody's got plenty of money to pay it out. And that's not necessarily the truth.
And then the legal fees. I mean, for me, whether you're a celebrity, whether you're in high up income level investment banker, whoever you are, if you make a great deal of money and have a great deal of wealth, you're going to have trouble getting a fast settlement. And those people, a lot of times, have to go through much more hell than the average person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. Not always, but I see a lot of that.
I want to talk to Christy, Michelle, about exactly what she is doing now, which is so exciting. When we started talking about, I don't know, it's been a couple of months ago, we were talking in big generalities, and then Christy's a lot like me in the respect that she's a fast thinker and she comes up with some pretty great ideas, and so immediately she started just popping with these great ideas. So Christy, tell us what's happened since you've launched yourself into this arena and what has transpired and what you've got going and all the great stuff that you're working on.
Well, I've been aware of your website, Parental Alienation Awareness, and I've been watching your site for a couple of years now out of, you know, curiosity and sort of educating myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I decided to get involved and I had this last sort of bout and situation with my father in May, I was like, you know what, I've got to do something about this. I can do something about this. I've done so much for military families and wounded warriors over the years. I think that this is the new thing that I need to get involved with. And it dawned on me that, you know, we're trying so hard, and as we should be, trying to make a difference in the court systems and with the laws, no doubt. But we need someone out there, maybe it's me and my friends and, you know, whoever I can get celebrity-wise, to help educate the kids, the actual kids, because I was getting some tweets from some people that said, oh, parental alienation, oh, that's what my childhood was. I didn't even know it had a name.
Mm-hmm. That's
Like, you know, and there's a lot of them out there that didn't, they had no idea what it was called, but that was exactly what they experienced in their life. And so my goal was to start a website called Alien Nation Me, and I wanted to create a character, a little alien that kids could relate to and think was really cool. And, you know, the goal is to, you know, get T-shirts and hats and stickers and, you know, all kinds of stuff that we could get made for kids and get them out to the schools and educate these children. Hopefully, you know, my wish is to make a movie about parental alienation, sort of like the after-school, you know, special sort of family film to get kids aware of it, kids who are not a part of it aware of it so that they know
mm-hmm.
what their friends are going through and sort of, you know, spread the word within the children because the more educated they are, the stronger they will be with that education. And I think that that's going to help them sort of get through it or ask for help or, you know, at least be able to, when they do become adults, be able to make sense of what their childhood was.
I love it. I absolutely love it, and I've told you that, you know, what you're doing and using your celebrity status to promote this issue is what we need, because as Michelle and I say all the time, this is on the fence right now, and I've told you this, Christy, this isn't a secret. I mean, this parental alienation thing just needs a little shove over the other side, and we will become, sadly, it has to be a household name before we can make a real change in divorce culture. And I think with you, you know, at the helm, running this driving this car over the other side, I think we're really, really going to make a difference. And kids are such a wonderful demographic to target.
And Christy, I want to, you know, expand the dimension from my perspective while I have the chance to, you know, to hear what you're saying. It's so profound to me, because from where I sit, I see that an adversarial system promotes parental alienation in a sense, because people in an adversarial system still believe they're going to be empowered by blaming the other person, and they're terrified of the system, and out of this kind of terror and fear, they try and dominate their child's attachment for fear of losing the child, for fear of being, many different fears. And because it's such a frightening system, people want, you know, behave in ways that they might not ordinarily behave. So there is the grid, in my perspective, you know, little bit of alienation to all the way to full-blown parental alienation where the child doesn't speak to the parent. And what you're doing can expand exactly the consciousness for all the people divorcing, whether it's the lightweight form all the way to the extreme form, because the lightweight form is just as damaging. Look at your particular thing. It was probably not a vicious divorce, but the consequences of not handling it right impacted you even as an adult, which really proves the point, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? This isn't a competition. This just is not a competition. Kids need their mom and they need their dad. If they've got a good mom and they've got a good dad, they need them. And that's the bottom line. And that's how it should be. And both parents should support each other. They should work together. They should help each other out for those kids. That's the decision that they made to have those children. It's their responsibility to make sure those children have a stress-free, wonderful childhood. And that's what needs to be done, and that's what has to happen.
Well said.
Yeah, and I wish so much, and Christy makes it sound so easy, and if people could just take to heart what she's saying when they're contemplating divorce and put their children first and realize that no matter what's happened in that two-person conflict to create that divorce, that children absolutely need time with both of their parents, because those parents have invested in that child. They've instilled their characteristics, their morals, their ethics, their thoughts into that child, and the heritage that exists on each side of the family, and so it's so important for a child to understand that the love can go both ways, and that a child shouldn't have to choose who they're going to be with or love.
That's correct. If their parents were married, if their parents remained married, they wouldn't have to choose. So if their parents are apart, why would they have to choose? They should never have to choose.
You're right. Christy, what do you think your parents could have done with you being an adult child? What could they have done for you that would have made this easier? Now, I'm not going to say that you wouldn't have had pain regardless of the divorce,
right.
But what could they have done to make it easier for you?
Oh, gosh. You know, like I said earlier, I really wish that my father had more strength with his new wife. I wish that she was more supportive of him, and you know, she doesn't have kids, so she doesn't understand, you know, the bond that my father and I have had for all my life. Mm-hmm. And I just I wish that she was more supportive of him, you know, and take responsibility for herself in marrying him, knowing that he had a life before her. You know, that's one wish that I have that could be different. I wish that my father could just say, okay, everybody stop. Christy, come here. We're going to talk. We're going to hug. We're going to hold on. We're going to be strong. I'm going to be there for you. I love you. I'm not going to force anything down, you know, your life or your throat or make you accept all this, 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 and this. I did make this decision, and that's separate from you. But you are still my daughter. You are all I care about. You are who I love. I am your parent, your father, everything till the day I die. And even after my death, I'm your dad. And that's what I really wish I could have from him, but I don't. It's just this stone-cold sort of, you know, you're an adult now, it doesn't matter, and you should just accept it sort of attitude. And I think that that, you know, God, God forbid if anything ever happened between my husband and I, if I treated my son like that, I'd want to strangle myself. I could never treat my child that way. And I wish that my father could be the man that he once was, you know?
Do you think he'll hear this, Christy?
Oh, I don't know. I have no clue. I don't know.
Well, you've been pretty clear about what you think and what you feel about the situation that exists today. What would you say to him right now if you could just make a plea to him? What I mean, you've done pretty well, but is there something very specific you would like to direct to him right now?
I guess I would say, you know, Dad, I wish you were in my life. I wish you could separate, you know, me from your new life and just be there for me and love me and, you know, be in your grandson's life and be a part of our life and allow your new life to integrate into ours eventually and not have it all be forced in. I just, you know.
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
What I would like to say is that list that you just gave is very ambiguous. It's got like be in our lives, understand me. What you need to do with him, perhaps, is give an exact job description. I want to see you on Tuesday, and I want to see you alone. I'm hoping to see you every Tuesday and on Thursdays with your grandson. You may be giving him way more credit for emotional skills than he may have.
Mm-hmm.
He may not understand any of those things you just said, or be off the hook by saying, "But I've done all that. I'm trying that." Make it black and white. Make it concrete. Make it iron, and say, "Here's what I'd like. Can you do any of this?"
Mm-hmm.
And write it out for him.
The thing is that I actually have done all of that, you know. I've done all of that, you know, and I didn't speak to him for a year and a half. I had seen him right before Thanksgiving 2009, and I was in about 4 days leaving for Afghanistan, one of the most dangerous places in the world, to spend time with the troops. And I was having lunch with him. And he had an agenda, and he just wanted to sit there and talk about how upset and angry he was that we were having a lunch alone and that his wife wasn't with him. And I'm like, can you not just have lunch, you know, like maybe 2 or 3 times a year, like just us? I mean, is that a problem? You know, like, I don't get it. Like, to me, that just seems natural to have lunch with your daughter, you know? It doesn't seem like...
It is. It's like invasion of the body snatchers.
Yeah.
Like he's there, but he's not there.
Right. And
like
so
you're dealing with a puppet. It's really hard to tolerate that. I can only imagine.
Well, I know that some of
I just feel that it's...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, and I really truly believe that it comes from his now influence, because when my mother was in his life, he wasn't like this, you know? And so I really believe that his new life and the wife is the one that is causing all the friction and not allowing us to blossom and bloom into a good, healthy father-daughter relationship. You know, I don't see that support happening.
Have you taken her aside and said, listen, can you help me?
Yeah.
And nothing?
I have. Mm-hmm.
She won't do it. She won't help. If she's that influential, she could.
No, she's, you know, we've done emails and stuff. She invited me to a 75th birthday this year. She said, let's put everything aside and, you know, life is short. You don't have your father forever. And, you know, of course, I've known that forever. You're preaching to the choir. I know that. I want him in my life. But, you know, I went to his 75th birthday, and it was nice, and my brother was there, and, you know, rest of the, you know, nieces and nephews and grandchildren. And then after that, I was so excited that I got to see him and, you know, be in that environment that I then invited him to a Father's Day barbecue that I was having. But it was, you know, a party. And, you know, lots of people were invited. And he had said yes, he wanted to come. And I was so excited he was going to come up and stay. And then when he saw the guest list, then he said, I'm not coming. I wanted
your mom was there, right?
Yeah, but I spent Father's Day with my mom all my life. It doesn't change for me.
No, of course not. Of course not.
You know, it's not his day. It's also my husband's day and all the other fathers that are
there.
It's not his day, you know.
You are highlighting something that every second family, not every, too many, are going through. I hope we can continue on the vein of giving people skills for how to help their former family and how to negotiate this loyalty bind that so many people feel. And if it's not one of the children of a former marriage, if it's not all of them, it's at least one of them that has this complicated thing. I don't think people are getting enough help with this. I think you're dead on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is something we've never talked about, and I think it's really important. We've got a caller that I'm going to grab here. The 630 area code, welcome. Do you have a question for Christy?
Yes. Hi, everybody. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Okay, I'm trying to grasp, Christy, your situation, and it sounds to me like your dad is, like for the rest of us that are alienated parents and our children, or targeted parents and our children are being alienated, it's almost like your dad would be the child in the situation and you would be the parent and the stepmother would be the one that's alienating your father. Is that kind of what's happening?
You know, I don't totally know. I just know that my father and I are alienated from each other. We never had that problem prior to my parents' divorce. You know, my parents were all a family. And then when their marriage broke up, it was, you know, him and his new wife wanting me to spend time with them and be in their life and start this whole new family and lifestyle and everything. And I was like, hold the fort, you know. I'm wounded here. I'm hurting. I need to bring back my stability and, you know, get it back on track with you, Dad. I can't go rushing into your new situation without some healing first and some time together. And that's all I've ever really wanted. I never said, oh, I hate your wife. I don't want her. I don't, you know, none of that. I just didn't like or I hated the fact that they were trying to force me into this new thing and not give it time.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I see. So,
you know, and
so
I,
you're not.
And I think I'm a step. You know, I'm a stepmother as well. And you know, it's my responsibility as a stepmother to make sure my husband is with his kids from his previous marriage. That relationship stays strong. I have to support that. That's my job. Because that's the commitment I made to him and his kids and our family. And I feel that my stepmother is not taking that responsibility. She's not helping. She's not making sure my dad stays on track with me. In fact, you know, like a couple years ago we went golfing. We went to the golf course, and she called probably 15 times while we're out on the golf course.
Wow.
I think that not only is that rude when you're on the golf course to be on the phone and, you know, not good, but also that's over the top behavior to me.
Right.
And in my opinion, you know, it's almost like, I mean, I'm not a child, but I'm having visitation with my dad, and there's interference.
Right.
And it shouldn't be that way.
I agree. And then lastly, before I hang up, are you at liberty to speak about the situation with your stepkids as far as some alienation happening there, or you can't talk about that right now?
I don't talk about my stepchildren in the media or anything. I never have.
Okay.
I am the stepmother, and it's not my liberty to do so. Those are my husband's children, and they have a mother, and that's their situation. So it's really not proper for me to discuss it.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it so
sure.
much.
Set
okay,
a good example, Christy. Go ahead. Good for
okay,
you.
What's
good
that?
For you.
What's that?
I said set a good example. Good for you.
That's right.
Well,
that's
yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Well, we've got just a few minutes left, and I just, Christy, I am so proud of you, and I just
thank
applaud
you,
you for what you're doing, and I know that we're going to do great things together, and let's keep working toward getting this movie done for kids, and then mm-hmm. the next project, because there will always be a reason to create awareness for this subject, parental alienation, and we need to make a difference. And I think, you know, we have three good girls on the line that have the wherewithal to get it done, and I know that we can. So mm-hmm. I want you to talk about, again, how people get to Alienation Me.
Mm-hmm.
Tell
mm-hmm.
us about the contact information for that.
Alienation.me is my webpage. It's not a site yet because it's just in the beginning stages of
right.
Getting all that built up and everything, and that's a process. So, you know, we have a page right now, and, you know, I've linked your page onto my page, and
yep.
there's also a Twitter thing that you can read on there. People are tweeting about it. There's also on Twitter, it's @AlienNationMe, and you can go on there and discuss your issues, share videos, stories, books, ideas, whatever you can to help, and also go to visit your site, Jill. And what is, how do you say your site again?
That is paawareness.org, paawareness.org. So, yes, definitely. We welcome anyone there that's having a problem and needs some information to please come and take a look at what we're doing there, creating awareness and educating the public about the remedies, effects, and behaviors of parental alienation. It's just incredibly important to recognize what's going on, if it's happening to you, and how to stop doing it if you're engaging in it. So please take a look and pay attention to Christy. She's going to make a big splash, and Michelle and I hope to be right there along with her. Michelle,
thanks
again tonight. Oh, and I want to say one more thing. I have offered Christy a show here on Syndicated News, and I'm hoping that she will take us up on it and be a regular contributor with John McCune and Ruthie and I here on, and Michelle on Syndicated News, have her own show and have a forum for talking about what she wants to talk about and then giving us some insight into that entertainment world on the West Coast. So, Michelle and Christy, thank you so much. Have a terrific night, both of you. And, Christy, let's do this again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I mean, I feel so good right now that we talked about all of this, and I just appreciate all of your support.
Terrific.
Thanks.
Michelle?
Talk to you all soon. Thanks,
all right,
everybody,
all right.
for tuning in.
Thanks, Michelle. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Good night.